We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Here we go. Let's see what happens when Adam and I put the microphone on. When we stop, when the cameras come on and we start getting real. What was it?
When people stop being polite
and start getting real. So that's what we're going to do on this episode, Adam.
Yeah.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam. Today is, Adam, wait for it, Friday.
It's Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend, partying, fun, looking forward to the weekend.
I know you can get confused in these trying times, Adam, on what day is which.
Well, I don't have my doormat that lists the days of the week outside my house.
One day.
Like the Slayton family. So I just have to rely on Rebecca Black to tell me. And if it's not Friday, she doesn't tell me. So then I just have a 1 in 6 chance.
If there is one thing in these crazy times that we can rely on, sir, it's Rebecca Black.
She never lets us down.
Okay. Man, we've got a busy show coming up. Adam, we have a very different interview than we normally do, but I think it is one that people are going to really enjoy. We'll get to that in a minute. It is David Gardner. David is a Carolina grad. He and his brother started the Motley Fool Investing Company.
TM. We really had to brush up on our economics.
Yeah. I felt like I was Warren Buffett or something while I was going through this.
I think David Gardner also felt like you were Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
Because then once we got off air, he's like, Jens, tell me some more of this advice you were giving me.
But so I think people are going to really, again, very different from what we do normally, but I think one that people are going to enjoy. Interesting.
Well, and also plenty of Tar Heel stuff right in that interview. So if you just hate everything to do with money, as so many people do, really.
If there's one thing people hate, it's money.
Then give it a chance. And if you're someone who thinks, well, I don't know that much about it, that's okay. Neither do Jones and I. And yeah, we were able to hold a conversation. And you might learn something, because I certainly did.
Did David give us a hot stock tip? Perhaps. Perhaps. You could be a multimillionaire by now if we had just invested between the time that he gave us this tip and today. So we're going to talk to David coming up in a little bit. I think you'll really enjoy that. We have really, I mean, Adam has a little Sebastian list. And then I have like a Trojan horse list that's going to come in and roll over because I've got some meat on that bone, Adam. So we got that coming up in a little bit, too. A reminder, we're brought to you by the UNC General Alumni Association. They work hard every day to serve Carolina's 336,000 living alumni and 66,000 GAA members. Adam, do you know what the final score is?
1-0.
It's always a great day to be a Tar Heel. Oh. Count the ways at alumni.unc.edu. Couple things to get to before we get to the interview, Adam. One, we had another edition of Carolina Insider Live that came on yesterday. Hope you're able to join us live, or if not, that you've been able to see it in an on-demand version. If not, it is available now. You can check it out on YouTube, the Carolina Athletic Facebook page. Scroll through the Go Heels Twitter account. There's an archive version on there as well. And Adam, I thought the show, not because you and I did anything, but I thought it was good, primarily because we had two good guests in Sean May and Dre Bly, and getting to talk to them was a lot of fun.
Three incredible athletes on the show.
Yep, yep.
Sean May, 2005 Final Four Most Outstanding Player. Dre Bly, Pro Bowler, all-time
Super Bowl
Tar
champion.
Heel football record holder.
Yep.
Jones running the mile while dribbling the basketball, while filming himself.
And timing.
I think that, now that I think about it, I think that should be its own separate category. Dylan Sorensen had someone else filming and timing.
Yeah.
You're doing a completely different athletic feat. It's like the difference between running the 100 and the 100 hurdles.
Yeah. So, if you don't know what we're talking about, Dylan Sorensen, a track coach at Carolina, one of the assistant coaches, his specialty is the distance running. And Dylan recently broke a world record. We talked about this on the live show, and I think we mentioned it during the last pod as well.
All the pods have reached the point where they're blending together.
They come together. It's just, Adam and I need to spend more time together.
Right.
But so Dylan ran it in 4:37, the mile while dribbling a basketball. It's a world record. Adam planted his stake in the ground and said, "This is my challenge to you, sir." It was a very demonstrative challenge that Adam gave me, where he demanded that I run this mile in 8.5 minutes while dribbling a basketball.
That's now the third time that you've said it, and it hasn't been any more correct any time that you said it. I think what actually happened was I asked you how fast you thought you could do it. And then
I said, "Adam, I don't know." And you said, "You better run an 8:30 or we're never speaking. This is my last pod, sir." So anyway, Adam, I demolished it. I ran it in 7:37. And I'm going to tell you something. I was huffing and puffing more than I thought I would be. Now, there are a couple qualifiers on this. I did it in the morning. I normally don't run in the morning. Number two, it was like right after a long holiday weekend. So I'm not going to say I was in my peak physical condition, but I fought through it.
Well, and we know what happens at your house on Memorial Day.
Yeah.
I mean, were there any corn cob incidents?
Parties, corn cobs, who knows what's happening out there. And finally, it was really humid, Adam. And I don't know if you know this, but it's hard to run when it's humid. But I was able to fight through it and ran it in 7:37.
Also, you hadn't trained for the altitude.
That's right. Well, one part that didn't make the little video package that we showed during the live show was I spoke directly to Dylan, and I told him that he ran it on a flat track, and I was running in elevation, and that if he needed some tips on how to run uphill, I'd be happy to sit down with him. So, there you go. 7:37, no big deal. No big deal.
How equivalent do you think this is to when people sit in the Smith Center and Coby White misses a free throw?
And they think, like, I make
8 out of 10 every time. I feel like it might be closer than we want it to be, but I didn't do it, so I can't say anything. But I think, like, the difference in getting to 7:37 and then down to 4:37,
oh gosh,
I feel like is further than the 3 minutes in my mind.
Absolutely, it would be.
Also,
I mean, think he almost ran it almost twice as fast as I did. Almost, even though the time was not bad.
Well, but he wasn't filming and timing.
Right. I think you could knock off 20 seconds. If I wasn't, the next challenge for you, Adam, no, if I wasn't dribbling and wasn't timing and wasn't filming. That's the next challenge. What do you think?
Just a straight mile.
Yeah, just 1 mile as fast as I could go.
Oh, I think easily knock off a couple minutes. Well, maybe not a couple minutes.
I mean, I can knock off. I bet I can knock off 30 seconds.
I bet you can knock off a minute.
I think it's harder than you think. To your point, I think when you start getting at that point, it's not easy. Like I think it's not easy to shave off time. Look, when you're an elite athlete, Adam, and you're competing at the highest level,
right?
It's hard to get those seconds feel like years.
In hindsight, do you wish you had worn your Michael Jordan jersey as Dylan did to cut down on the wind resistance?
I wore my Mr. Goose Honkers Has a Posse shirt.
Limited edition.
And problem is it's an XL, which is a little big on me, so I bet there was a little wind shear there.
Yeah. So really 725.
Yeah.
12 seconds of wind shear.
I mean, when it goes into the archives, may as well just make it 712.
Right.
Let's just round down to 7 minutes.
658.
350
while dribbling two basketballs.
So anyway, that was a lot of fun. I mean, listen to the hilariousness that you could have on Carolina Insider Live.
Yeah, if that doesn't get millions of views, I don't know what. We can't do any better.
Adam, one other thing from the live show that I wanted to mention was the Vince Carter clip that we ran. He was on the All the Smoke podcast with Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes and talked about. When he arrived to campus for the first time and started playing pickup, and how he was playing these unbelievable pickup games, and how he realized that had all those guys stayed, the starting five potentially in 96 could have been McGinnis, Carter, Stackhouse, Jamison, Wallace. That's not bad. I know we've talked about that before, but unbelievable.
I think that's the winner of the all-time what might have been Carolina team.
The only one I can even think of, I mean, maybe if Worthy sticks around for next year, but even then, I mean, because Brad Daugherty and Kenny Smith didn't get there till 84, right?
Right.
So, I mean, and Worthy would have been gone. He had one more year left. I don't think that compares.
You get one more year of Worthy Jordan Perkins.
Right. Maybe the 06 where you have the Hansbrough group coming in with the 05 championship team all having eligibility remaining. For the most, Jawad Williams, Jackie Manuel, Melvin Scott did not, but Sean May, Raymond Felton did. So there,
Marvin Williams.
And then you add Hansbrough and, you know, Green and Guignard and those guys. I mean, that would have been a good one too. David Noel still there.
That would have also been a good basketball team.
That would have been a decent basketball team as well, yes.
I think the Carter team is the one that everybody immediately goes to. And it's not like there was some drama about our Stackhouse and Wallace coming back. Maybe they will. I think it's more of just Vince Carter was out on the floor playing pickup. I was surprised he didn't mention you could have been in that group.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was on the
my pleated khakis were probably watching from the sidelines.
He was on the floor thinking, man, this could have been. And you could tell the fact that Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson likewise were equally impressed at what that group could have been. Coached by Dean Smith. I'll take that team.
Reminder that we're brought to you by LS Tractor. Don't let your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any of the Tar Heel game action. LS Tractor will help make short work of them. Normal yard maintenance, which, by the way, Adam, I did some of this past weekend.
Pre-mile or post-mile?
Pre-mile. Mm. Moving some bushes around, weeding. Not the most fun activity, but when LS Tractor's involved, helps make it as fast as possible. LSTractorUSA.com. That's LSTractorUSA.com. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? Adam, today, Carolina Athletics, well, let's take a step back. Yesterday, the University of North Carolina put out its return to campus plan, a staggered return for staff, students, as you move through the summer. Of course, students aren't returning until early in August. No in-person summer school this year in Chapel Hill. So Carolina Athletics also on the back of that put out its return, a couple of key dates, plus a lot of guidelines and best practices for sanitation, for social distancing, for protective equipment that is asked to being to be used in certain situations. So, Adam, a positive step for sure. There was a full athletic department telemeeting on Thursday morning, and a presentation was shown there. And a couple things. Rick Steinbacher, who, of course, we've had on the pod and used to be on the radio network, and we know Rick played football at Carolina, now is the head of Carolina's facilities. Rick said a couple of things that I thought was correct when presenting this to the staff. He said that it's kind of like being a defensive coordinator in football, and you're about to face an offensive coordinator who has a scheme that you've never seen before, and you are going to best plan that you know how, and you're going to try to, you know, check every box and be ready going into the game, but that you then fully understand that you have to be flexible, and there's got to be great communication, and some of this plan will never see the light of day, and some of it may be scrapped once you get started and realize that it's not what you thought was, or it isn't the best way to handle it, even though you thought it might be. So I don't think that's unique, Adam, as far as athletics or even businesses across the country, as people try to, as Rick said, get as prepared as possible, have a plan, but understand that plan has to be very flexible and it may change in a moment.
Yeah, I think you've got to have this step-by-step approach. You can't just throw open the doors and say, everybody come back, things will be fine. You've got to go a little bit at a time. And I know everybody who's listening, I'm sure, wants to know, what does that mean for me as Tommy Tar Heel fan? I want to know about these football games that I want to go to or whatever. You can't know the answer to that until you get past these first few steps. And once you get past these first few steps, you can start coming up with other plans. Certainly a lot of different models out there. And as things progress and we get deeper into the summer, we'll have a little better idea of what's happening there.
The big question is the capacity, I think. And not only what that capacity is it 20%? Is it 50%? Is it 33%? Whatever. But then I think the big challenge becomes, who are the people that make up that capacity? And not just who is comfortable going to the game, because I think that is going to be an individual decision, of course. But which tickets do you honor for which game? Does that make sense? And I am glad I'm not the one trying to figure that out, because I think that is a very complicated answer. I do think there will at least be some acceptance of, hey, this is a unique situation. We understand people are trying to figure this out. But there will also be some hurt feelings, for lack of a better term, for some people who aren't able to go to some games, I would imagine, assuming you're working with a lowered capacity.
And I think the most important thing is what you said, is everybody just needs to take a big, deep breath and realize that this is for 1 year and it's nobody's first choice. However it ends up being. And it's not as simple as just saying, well, just let season ticket holders attend. Okay, where are they going to sit? Are they going to sit in their seats that we know people are very particular about the seats they have. They have a connection to those seats. You might not get to sit in those seats for this year. You might get to, but you might not get to. But either way, just take a big, deep breath. Think how far we've come from a couple months ago when everybody was saying, well, there's not going to be any football at all. If we get to see any football with fans in the stands, then that is a successful fall. And then we'll start to worry about basketball. And it's just little baby steps. And if we all get to be part of those little baby steps, that's great. I think your and I's world is probably going to change some in ways that we don't know yet. And just please remind me that I'm supposed to take a big, deep breath and just be okay with it, because sometimes I'm not. But I think overall, and I think one thing that makes it so clear of how difficult this is you've got smart people saying completely opposite things. Like the University of Michigan president, I assume, is a smart person. And it sounded this week like they thought maybe no football. But then you've got people on the complete opposite side with the exact same information. So that's why things are so fractured. And also, remember, there's no one person in charge of NCAA football. So you've got a lot of people who think they have the best plan.
I do wonder, you know, Jay Billis has beaten this drum for a long time about having a czar, for lack of a better term, of someone in charge of NCAA basketball and someone in charge of NCAA football. Of course, Mark Emmert is the president of the NCAA, but that's a murky relationship there. So do you find somebody who is the head of it? And it's complicated because there's so many different conferences and levels of play, and it's just not an easy answer. And it's kind of, Adam, I feel like the NCAA has grown in a way where it's like decisions are made along the way that makes sense at the time, and we're talking about something way past what we started talking about here, but or makes sense for this conference or for this level of play, and it's kind of patchwork all been put together through time where you get down the road and you're to this point where it's like, gosh, well, I can't really change that because it's always been the way, that's always been the way it is for that group, but it makes sense for that group, and it's just complicated.
It's time for that. It's time for a person to be in charge and make decisions for this billion-dollar business. And to me, that's what's most interesting about all this is what are the permanent changes that come out of this that change what we knew? Not just the stopgaps you put in place for this upcoming academic and athletic year. What changes are going to happen that change things for good? You go back and listen to that podcast we did after Carolina played at Cameron Indoor Stadium and tell me you think that's a viable method going forward. That's going to have to change. It has to. And what else? We've talked about the tickets. Are they going all electronic? I think there's going to be multiple things, like as small as my ticket, as big as someone in charge of NCAA football, that need to happen, not just to handle a pandemic, but to make college sports as a whole stronger and more effective moving forward.
Adam, anything else you want to tackle here before we get to David Gardner?
No.
Okay. So as we mentioned, Adam, I've been surprised in a good way when I've mentioned that we had talked, I'm just talking to some friends or colleagues and said, oh, we talked to David Gardner. And they say, who's David Gardner? I said, oh, he started the Motley Fool. And they say, oh, wow. I mean, this is something that I think a lot of people are aware of and use their services. I mean, it's just, I was unaware of how popular it was.
He has made it accessible, he and his brother Tom, to a much wider group than ever would have been interested in this topic before.
Absolutely. And it's to their credit that I think they're trying to, and we talk about this with him, but they're trying to make it very relatable and as easy to understand as it can be, because it can be so beneficial if you do it the right way, investing and being a part of stock market and all those things.
You can't tell me you're not getting your money out of your Carolina Insider subscription when a couple weeks ago you had Dan Cortez.
Yeah.
This week, David Gardner. I don't want to see any subscription refund requests come into this office because you're getting your money's worth.
Our interview presented by the Atma Hotel Group, new owners of Sheraton Chapel Hill and Courtyard by Marriott Chapel Hill. Let's talk to David Gardner from the Motley Fool. Back with more on the Carolina Insider.
Our guest today is a Tar Heel, but our guest today is also the all-time answer to, what are you going to do with that English degree? Because David Gardner did the most obvious possible thing with his English degree. He went and started an investment advice company that you've probably heard of, the Motley Fool. What all English degree holders do. So, David, thanks so much for giving us some time today.
Well, thank you, Adam. Thank you, Jones. This is so much fun.
What led you in the first place to the University of North Carolina?
It was a Morehead Scholarship. These days, you guys know it's called the Morehead Cain Scholarship. And I have the distinction, like a lot of great Carolina athletes, among whom I will not otherwise number myself, but I have the distinction of having turned down Duke to go to Carolina.
Nice. Were you a Tar Heel from the start, or were you a Tar Heel once you were a Morehead Tar Heel?
It's the latter, Adam, and I'm almost sad to tell you this, but I was raised in Washington, D.C., in the shadows of Georgetown University. So I watched Coach John Thompson grow a program from nothing, where we would go to McDonough Gymnasium and watch the early Hoyas play, and they'd be losing to the St. Peter's Peacocks. And then I watched them all the way through as a kid growing up with the program to the national championship game, and that really hurt me. And so I technically, I think it's fair to say, I, quote, hated Carolina, end quote, as I joined as a freshman. And this is another black mark against me. I cheered against our alma mater throughout my freshman year on campus because I still was a big Georgetown fan. And then somewhere in my sophomore year, I also met my wife that year in a creative writing class. I started thinking, you know, this is my school, so I think I should start cheering for my school. And I'm a complete fanboy ever since.
I was about to say, Dave, we may have to go and end this interview now after only like 2 minutes. It may be the shortest interview we've ever had on the Carolina Insider. So, if you're a quote-unquote fanboy now, so what does that entail for you? How closely do you try and follow and support Carolina Athletics?
Yeah, so I watch every game pretty much, guys, and that goes for men's basketball and football, and whenever the baseball team is in the postseason and is watchable on ESPN. So I keep up with everything, and then I'm happy to watch some of our other winning sports. I don't regularly get to see Karen Shelton and her team on television, but I'm amazed by the record of success. So I really love success and winning, not just as a fan. We all like that, but I love to learn from it, study it. And so, guys, I have watched pretty much every Carolina football game since I was an undergrad, and that goes for all the basketball games too.
What kind of stuff do you learn from a winning coach? I mean, what when you're studying a winning program or a winning coach, what kind of stuff are you trying to learn?
Well, it's so analogous to investing, and obviously that's where I butter my bread as a fool, capital F. And the name, by the way, comes from Shakespeare. It was Act 2, Scene 7 of the play As You Like It, which I studied with Dr. Daryl Gless at the University of North Carolina. He had a great number of years there as a Shakespeare professor. But I always loved the fools because they could challenge conventional wisdom. They were the characters in Shakespeare's plays that used humor and could call the king or queen out, the only member of the court who could do that. And so I loved that approach to life. And so that's the approach I've taken with my own financial advice. And, you know, I love it when coaches go against the grain or surprise you or do things that you wouldn't expect. But more than anything, as an investor, I pretty much buy stocks and then I hold them for long periods of time. Like as long as Dean Smith coaches a program, that's kind of how I invest. And so there's a lot of one-to-one mirroring between what works in sports and then what works in your portfolio.
As you were growing into loving the Tar Heels during your time on campus, what were some of your favorite athletic memories or encounters that stuck with you?
Well, thank you for that. My own greatest athletic achievement was that I was on an intramural wiffle ball team. And at one point, it was 3-on-3. And so at one point, one of our guys couldn't make it. So my friend Glenn Etter and I took on a threesome, 3-on-2 in wiffle ball. And those guys were each like 6'4". And Glenn and I are more like 5'10", 5'11". And we won that game, wiffle ball, 2-on-3. And we were laughing hysterically afterwards at it. So you can see I don't have a great athletic career at Carolina. I did play high school football and high school baseball, but I had no chance when I got to Carolina to play any serious sport. But, you know, I would say that was my favorite athletic memory. But if you're talking about Carolina sports, you know, those were the Dick Crum years. We were very conservative in football. We weren't very good. Derek Fenner was there. He was a great player. But I think about, in particular, I was class of 88. So I think our only player of note, class of 88, was Ranzino Smith. And you guys might remember, I don't know. I mean, I'm a little bit older, but Ranzino at one point got injured and left the game. And they came back on with a headband that kept drooping over his eyes. And he still kept heisting up threes throughout the second half. In my mind, he couldn't even see. But that's how much Ranzino loved to shoot. So That was our big Carolina athlete classmate that I remember, class of 88.
You know, David, we actually had Ranzino Smith in studio a couple of months ago, and even if that story isn't true, I fully believe it because Ranzino reminded us how much he loved to shoot the basketball. That sounds correct, even if it is 100% right.
I will tell you, let's rewind the videotape. I think I have a lot of that correct, but Ranzino would know.
So, as we've mentioned and you've touched on, you were an English major here at Carolina. What was the plan as you were in school at Carolina? What did you think you were going to do?
I thought I was going to be a writer.
I'm glad that didn't work out.
Well, I'm speaking to a very good one right now. So, I love writing. I love the craft of writing. I've since written some books. The Motley Fool's published books over the years. Although I'm a writer who needs a deadline. I don't know if you're that way, Adam, but somebody has to force me to write. I don't do it out of compulsion. I should say out of internal motivation. But I do enjoy it after it's done, and I did a lot of that at Carolina. And Doris Betts and Daphne Athis were some of my great writing teachers. And then I think of other great English professors like George Lensing there for so many years, Dr. Robert Kirkpatrick, Dr. Gless, I already mentioned. These are people who were really formative for me. So as I came out of Carolina, I had a 400-page novel that I was going to finish at some point that I never did. And then I started writing freelance. And I loved sports, guys, so maybe that's already evident. But my sport was baseball. Growing up, our family had a minority interest in the Minnesota Twins. So we were minority owners. So I grew up as a Minnesota Twins bat boy. And I had incredible experiences as a young guy getting to hang out with professional athletes. And so as it came time for me to write and figure out what I wanted to write, I started writing about baseball. And that was the era that Bill James was just kind of emerging as a force for good, understanding statistics better and changing how we think about, in this case, baseball. And, of course, that work eventually got documented in Moneyball, and Billy Beane has put those ideas into play, initially with the Oakland Athletics. And these days, as you guys know, everybody, it's the conventional wisdom, everybody is following along with Moneyball. So I started writing about sabermetrics back then, got a few pieces published, but ultimately I started to realize I'm never going to make a real dent in this world. Adam, you just kept plugging, right? You just keep being resilient and keep writing, and you can indeed achieve prominence that way. But I think I was a little impatient. So I started to say, hey, what if I write about the stock market instead? Because while you and I can't really play down on the baseball field, we can actually compete against anybody in the investment arena. We're all down on the field with the lights on us, because you can pick some stocks and you can score how you did this year, and you can compare yourself to Warren Buffett or the industry average or anybody that you want to. And so that democratizing sense that, you know, I could actually write about stocks, a much more underfollowed topic, that really drove the Fool.
Wow. You just opened the door to a lot of things right there. So what's this about Minnesota Twins bat boy?
So, my grandfather was a successful entrepreneur, self-made man, born in 1903 in upstate New York, right on the border with Canada. That's how far north he was. He grew up playing baseball as the 10th of 11 kids against Native Americans on the border. But when it came time for a university, he went to Georgetown, which is kind of why I grew up near Georgetown here in Washington, D.C. And then he went on to found his own insurance company, and he borrowed some money in the 1950s and bought almost 50% of the Washington Senators. But the problem was our number started with a 4, not a 5. And so as the Washington Senators then moved to Minnesota in 1961, my grandfather kept owning them right through into the year 1984 when we sold. The majority owners were always the Griffith family, Clark and Calvin Griffith. But we were the minority, the private minority owners. And so 1984, I'll just tell you guys, you know, I spent my youth with a AM radio underneath my pillow, trying to pick up Twins games at night, because that's the only time you could pick up a game that far away, Washington, D.C. So I'd listen to WHO Des Moines, Iowa, and pick up Twins games. That's about as close as I ever really got to the team. And my whole youth, the Twins were horrible. From 1966, the year I was born, to 1984, Twins only ever made the playoffs pretty much once, and that was the strike season where there was a half season, and the Twins, you know, once made the playoffs. So sadly, we sold in 1984. 3 years later, the Twins would win it all with Kirby Puckett, Ken Herbeck, some of the great players that I've gotten to know a little bit. So that's the Minnesota Twins connection. I'm a lifelong Twins fan. So is my brother Tom and our whole family.
Wow. So What was Kirby Puckett and that team? I mean, I think casual baseball fans have a knowledge of that Twins team. What were those guys like in real life?
Yeah, they were really, I mean, it was amazing to me because they were such young guys and such good guys, right? I was there, I was bat boying like 81, 82 when I was 15. So those guys were like the losingest team in Major League Baseball. Frank Viola, Ken Herbeck, Gary Gaetti, the guys who would all be on the team that won it all 6 years later, were in the process, kind of like Carolina Hoops last year, of losing most of their games. And it hurt a lot, I'm sure. But they were so young, it built character. And then 6 years later, the Twins knocked off the St. Louis Cardinals to win their first World Series since the history of the franchise, because they moved in 1961 and had never won. So it was fun for me because they were so young. There wasn't a lot of ego or cockiness. So I felt kind of included, like, try to hit some fungos, pick a short hop ball, these kinds of things with the players at the time was just a lot of fun.
Dave, I want to go back to obviously the stock side of things here. When did things change for you from, you know what, I'm gonna try writing about this a little bit, to growing to the point now where you're giving people advice and you've got this company? I mean, when did that step get taken from something that you thought you'd try out to something that was very successful for you?
Thank you, Jones. Yeah. So the year was April of 1993. So about 8 months earlier, I'd quit my one job I had up until that point, which was writing for a financial newsletter. I wasn't enjoying that very much, more because of the culture as opposed to the job. But anyway, we just started a newsletter for our parents' friends. And when I say newsletter, of course, this is pre-internet, so this is print. We're mailing these babies out. And I think we printed off 1,000 copies of our first one. It was called The Motley Fool. The first issue came out in, it was June of 1993. Let me get my dates right. Sorry, June of 1993 was our first edition. 35 people subscribed, so we sent it out to 1,000 people, all the people, but friends and family who loved us. We got 35 subscriptions. And I was disconsolately at a cocktail party, like the day that the number came in, and I sent it to an older gentleman, and he said, you know, that's actually a pretty good response rate. That's 3.5%. That's much better than direct marketing. Where it's normally 1%. That still didn't really console me. But anyway, so we started in June of 93, but we started somewhere that fall, and then in early 1994, we started to realize that the internet was happening and online services were going to be amazing. And so even though we were running a print newsletter and we got up to maybe 300 or 400 subscribers, we were spending all of our time online. And as a writer, I loved the idea of forums, you know, discussion boards where you could post something up, like your analysis of the last Carolina basketball game, and somebody would respond. I mean, we take it for granted these days, right? On our websites, we see all people come and talk about the game after the game on the forums, premium or free. But back then, that technology was just brand new. And so I found it addictive. I really loved studying sports and putting out ideas in the stock market. Anyway, so what really happened, Jones, is that we played an April Fool's joke, and on April 1st of 1994, we published it. We noticed there were a lot of people hyping penny stocks using the online medium to, you know, get people excited about really questionable, dodgy stocks that were trading at 37 cents a share. And then if you just get enough people to buy, the stock would like double to 74 cents. And then they'd rinse and repeat the next month with the next made-up company. We really didn't like that. So we played an April Fool's joke and created a fake account and started to hype a company that didn't exist to kind of lampoon, as you'd want a fool to do, the people who were doing penny stock pump and dump. And that came to the attention of the Wall Street Journal. And so we got an article written up on what we'd done online. And then Forbes picked that up. And then America Online, which was such a big dog in the 1990s, as you guys will remember, America Online saw that we were just paying customers, and all of a sudden we were getting written up in the Wall Street Journal and Forbes. And so they signed us, and we started keyword fool on AOL, Jones, August 4th of 1994. And I know this answer's already been a little too long, but I'll just mention within a couple months, the New Yorker magazine put us in the talk of the town and said, hey, look at this new crazy thing, the Motley Fool, helping people invest, average people invest. And at that point, we had agents and publishers. We had a book deal through Simon Schuster. We did coast-to-coast radio shows, and the Motley Fool was born.
When you look back at issue number one of the newsletter, what's something you think, man, I nailed that? And then what's something that you think, that one wasn't so good?
Yeah, that's a great question, Adam, and that's an easy answer for me. On the very first page, we said, you know, we're in Motley Fool. We want our readers to be our writers, and so we made it kind of a community feel. And that makes a lot of sense because that's what the Motley Fool has been ever since. We've gotten so much great input from our community. We've hired, we have hundreds of employees today. We've hired a number of them just from directly from our online site over the years. And now that we're a 27-year-old company, some of those people have been with us for just about 27 years. So that community feel was there on page one. If I could take one thing back, it would be some of the stock picks we made in that first issue. Those weren't great companies. And I've learned a lot about investing since. Those are my easy answers.
What mistakes did you make in picking those first ones that have made you better informed here in 2020?
Yeah, so I would say the most prominent thing is that I feel like I was only scanning, I'm going to use a college basketball analogy here, I was really only following very lower division schools and trying to find winners among also-ran programs. And what I've learned since then is that we should be buying, I hate to say this, we should be buying the Carolinas, we should be buying the Dukes, that's why I hate to say that, but we should be thinking about what wins and wins over time and not think that we can find some hidden program that no one really knows about that, in our minds, undervalued. And even if we're right and that school has a great year the next few years, it may not even make the dance, right? And so I was creating, I think, a portfolio back in those days that wasn't really going to be dance ready. And since then, what I've learned is we should be buying all the great brands, all the great companies, and holding them. Just as long as Roy Williams keeps coaching, we should be holding that stock.
David, I think some people are almost intimidated by the stock market if they don't understand it or if they don't quite know what to do, especially I think younger people. What is something about investing or being involved that you would say to somebody like that, that maybe they don't understand or know about jumping into the game?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, we could all do it. And I'm an English major, so I'm a pretty good proof positive of what I'm saying. I was raised by a dad who loved the stock market. But the stock market isn't much different from a farmer's market. Farmer's market, you go buy fruits and vegetables. Stock market, you just go buy pieces of companies. And the beauty of the stock market is, if you do a good job, it goes up over time, right? So whatever you paid for that fruit or that vegetable, that thing keeps appreciating. And the good news is, if you're doing a good job, working hard, earning a salary, every 2 weeks saving some more, over the course of time, you're going to be shocked by how well you do by buying stocks on the stock market. Now, there are different types of stocks you can buy, and there are mutual funds, too. And I don't think we're going to go through a financial primer here on the Inside Carolina podcast, but Carolina Insider podcast. But I will say that it should not be intimidating to anybody. For the most part, what we're doing is we're saying, you know, what company do I love that I buy from on a regular basis? Or maybe I have a friend who works there who says it's a great company. What are the best companies of our time? And then what we're doing is we're just opening up a brokerage account, which is very simple these days, and with almost any amount of money, because it's now been made even easier to get started with the stock market, because you can now buy fractional shares, and there are no commissions. And for people who are investors, they know exactly what I'm talking about now, but for people listening, they don't understand those terms. You should just know that there's no cost to buy stocks anymore. There sure was when I was at Carolina. And you had to have a certain amount of money to begin buying stocks back when I was at Carolina. These days, you can invest with a dollar. You can buy a dollar of Facebook stock or a dollar of Amazon stock. That is an amazing change with no commissions, no fees. Right? So the bar has just been lowered as low as it could ever be, far lower than it was before. But the game remains the same, guys, which is to find the companies that are going to be the best companies in the next 10 to 20 years or next 3 years at least. Most people playing the stock market game are trading in and out. They're spending a lot of time, I think, and they're wasting away their returns and their time. In the meantime, you and I just buy Carolina basketball, and we buy to hold, and we hold it over 25 years, and we see how many wins we rack up, and that's it works just the same with the stock market.
What you just said was so easy that even I understood it, which I think is
what's
great about what you do. You make it so accessible. If it's that easy, Why doesn't everyone do that? Why are there so many people out there who make it so complicated and try to make it difficult to understand?
I think there are two primary forces there, Adam. One is that there are just not enough people who understand themselves. So as we've looked at this at the Motley Fool over the years, and we started the Motley Fool Foundation in the last year to start to help in this area, I think. But, you know, you have a lot of, you want the teachers to teach the kids about money, you know, teach them the stock market. The earlier a child gets started with a dollar in the stock market, man, you do the numbers, compounding returns at 9% a year, put that into a calculator spreadsheet, and it's really amazing what happens over the course of 50 or 80 years. Everybody's living long these days. So the earlier you get on the train of the stock market, the more amazing that is. But the problem is there aren't enough teachers who feel confident enough themselves to teach the kids. And so that's force number one. There's just a lot of ignorance out there. We look back on the medieval times and we say that was the Dark Ages. There wasn't enough knowledge. There wasn't probably enough science. There wasn't enough awareness of history. Well, I feel like I was born in the Dark Ages of understanding money. And we're trying to dip our sword in the fire and wheel it above our heads here at the Fool and get as many people into the light as possible, because it really is much easier than I think most people think. So force number one is just mass ignorance, Adam. And force number two, there are certainly some players out there that benefit from you and I being clueless. People who, you know, sell questionable financial vehicles or, you know, bad products, or, you know, are on commission to get you to buy this or that thing, and you're not that clued in about that annuity or that insurance or which brokerage account to start. And certainly there are forces out there in the industry that benefit from your ignorance there. And, you know, the most obvious form of ignorance is just the amount of debt that people have, especially on credit cards. So the average American, and I know I'm speaking during COVID-19 times where it's hard for everybody, but rewind, you know, 2 years ago, this is just as true then, or fast forward 2 years from now, it'll be just as true then. Most people have credit card debt that's you know, double-digit interest rates. And that's really hard to overcome. So there's a famous line about those who understand the benefits of compound investing end up getting paid by the people who don't. Or those who don't understand the compounding effects of debt in their lives are doomed to pay it to those who do. So there are some financial truths and some basic economics out there, but I would say very much the Motley Fool takes the attitude that everybody can learn this, everybody should learn this. And this is if you didn't have this at Carolina, you should be supplementing this as an adult learner. And darn it, it's not that hard. It really is pretty easy. It's also a lot of fun.
David, you mentioned, of course, COVID-19 and kind of the reality that we're all in right now. And the stock market has shown some of that reality here in recent weeks. What has been your opinion on the fluctuations in the market? What is your approach right now? What is your kind of view on the reality as far as the stock market is concerned that we're in at the moment?
Yeah, well, I would say that the stock market had never gone down so fast. So it lost about 35 percentage points in 32 days. And, you know, there have been crashes in the past, but even 1987, when I was a Carolina junior, people talk about, I think it was Black Friday.
Yeah,
anyway,
Friday.
It was one bad day where the market declined about 23% in one day. Well, that was the worst drop of our lifetimes in a single day. But if you looked at it over that month, kind of March, February into March, it was more than that. So it was a shock and nothing that I had predicted. And I don't think anybody else had really predicted it either. And by the way, Jones, I make no effort to predict the stock market's movement, because all that really matters to me is lower left to upper right. Right. If you look at the stock market over the last 20 years, the last 50 years, the last 100 years, you'll see it's a beautiful graph. Big picture, lower left to upper right. Right. The stock market tends to rise around 9% a year. And that is amazing. You're not going to find many things to do that. That does include every drop and every gain. So from my standpoint, that's why I don't spend time predicting the market, because I've made a lifetime commitment as an investor. I'm going to be in it to win it. From age 18 when I started, I'm 53 today, and I'm in it to win it till I'm 93, or whenever I need to pull the money out to live off of as a guy who's not earning a salary anymore. So from that standpoint, Jones, you know, it's sort of good news for a lot of people, especially if you are listening to this podcast and you're under my age. I mean, you just saw the stock market reset itself at a much cheaper price, and so the companies that you're buying this month are better priced than they were last month or the month before. And again, if you're playing, I think, the only game that counts, the long-term game, then that's kind of good news if you can kind of get out of the COVID-19 mindset and just think forward, which to me is all that really matters. By the way, my license plate on my car is Future. Here in Washington, D.C., nobody else wanted that one. So I went up with the vanity, $50 for the vanity plate. you ever see me driving around the greater D.C. area, it's future, because that's where I try to live. I try to live in the future and think back to now and ask myself, what are the stocks that you and I should be buying? What are the companies we should be part owners of?
Okay, so let's put this back in basketball terms so that I can still understand what you're saying. I'm on board with the Carolinas. I'm not on board with the Dukes, but let's say like Carolina, Kentucky, UCLA, Michigan State, something like that. How do I know when a company, say Gonzaga, has gone from being, oh, that's a plucky new company doing something weird and new, to that company is actually going to stick around and be good for a while? Because it feels like we're in a time where there's a lot of those.
I agree with you, Adam. And, I love the basketball analogies, so I can spend all day with you guys just using basketball analogies for investing. But to me, Gonzaga is a great example, because that was something that is an upstart, as you mentioned. 20 years ago, before Coach Few got there, not many people were talking about Gonzaga hoops. And these days, it's routinely a top 10, top 5 program. So I've watched that happen over the course of my life with companies. You have too, because Amazon is a great example. And Amazon is actually from the same neck of the woods in terms of its corporate headquarters as Gonzaga, for the record. But, yeah, I mean, I'm 53, so I'm dating myself a little bit. But I first picked Amazon stock at $3.21 in 1997. I've held it ever since. So at the time,
it was slightly higher than that now, David?
I think it's been my best stock, but the reason I'm happy about it isn't just because I have it in our family portfolio for my kids, but because I put it right out there on the front page of the Motley Fool back in that day, and a lot of people followed it. And whether or not they've continued to hold it, as I've done, right through to 2020, 23 years later, it's been a great stock for the most part. But I also don't want to lock down on one stock or just Gonzaga, right? Because it's not about one thing. It's about pattern recognition, about looking for these kinds of situations. And for the most part, maybe where the basketball analogy breaks down, the companies that do this usually are disrupting how the world has worked, right? So Amazon comes along and starts selling people stuff online. It started with books. In fact, my mouse pad still reads Earth's Biggest Bookstore. So I have my mouse pad from back in the day. That's all Amazon was. It was Earth's Biggest Bookstore. You guys may remember that.
Didn't they used to put the mouse pads in every package of books that you ordered? Don't I remember them sending mouse pads out?
That's probably where I got it. So, but you think about companies that have come along and just offered something better. Another great example is Netflix, which is maybe my second best stock. And Netflix, initially, you guys will remember this, initially they were just mailing DVDs. So you could rent the movie down at Blockbuster, which seemed brainless because it was 5 minutes away, or you could mail it back and forth to Netflix, which seemed crazy. In the same way, the 140 characters on Twitter, when I first heard about it, seemed crazy. But often the things that seem crazy initially, and maybe the Motley Fool is another good example, often those things, if they're managed well and they have visionary leadership, like Coach Few, they can be steered into world-class leaders, and that's been true of many of the companies that we've watched grow up. And there are a lot more of companies than there are college basketball programs, so I'm hard-pressed to think of a lot of Gonzagas, but I can think of a ton of stock. I'll give a quick example recently. I bet you guys have used Zoom in the last few weeks.
Sure.
I'm just betting.
Yeah. Of course.
So the whole world has started to use Zoom. And Zoom, because of a black swan event, so-called, Zoom has been pushed and thrust into the limelight. And it's also gotten some criticism for some of the lax security protocols not in place with the platform. But I'm going to give them a break on that one, because what they've done in the main is they have connected the world during the hardest time of our lives. And so that's an example for me of a recent stock pick in a company that I believe in. I also want to hasten to add that I'm wrong a lot. So one thing I never do is load it up on one stock or, thinking it's all going to be Amazon, because even Amazon has had some horrible years, as Netflix has too. That's why we're always diversifying. So, going back to Coach Few, I mean, you're looking for excellence in the leadership. So Jeff Bezos, Steve Jobs, the list goes on of great CEOs, visionary leaders. Frankly, those for me are the great leaders of our time. I don't spend a lot of time looking to the world of politics, even though I grew up in Washington, D.C., for my leaders. I find my leaders, for the most part, among great coaches and great CEOs. And then I invest with them. So Carolina basketball fans, we're just invested emotionally and psychologically in our school and in our teams. But with your dollars, you can invest for real, financially. And when you're right, and Netflix goes on and crushes it, or Zooms ahead, you have real material gains in your life. that can change the course of your family's destiny by finding these kinds of companies. So that's why I love the game of the stock market more than any game, even though in the room in which I'm speaking to you guys, by the way, I don't know if you've ever heard any jingles, but I have my Carolina jester cap on. So I apologize if there have been any bells over our course of time. But the other thing that's with me in this room where I pick all my stocks is 837 board games, because I absolutely love games. So I grew up playing board games. I love video games. Games are like the thing that runs through my whole life, most of all. But the game of the stock market is the most consequential game to get good at and to win.
Okay, I have two questions. Number one, what's your favorite board game?
Yeah, my favorite board game is probably Dominion. And some of us listening may know that game. It's a deck-building game. I won't explain the mechanism here, but basically Donald Vaccarino, who's the game designer, innovated with a new concept where as you're playing a game, you're buying cards into the deck that you're playing with from the board. You're like drafting. It's like you're basically picking up five-star blue-chip recruits, and you add them to your deck of cards, and you're playing against others trying to rack up points I won't explain the overall game here, but the reason I mention that, Jones, is that I've probably played that game with my kids more than any other game. So if scoring yourself based on just sheer volume or just the numbers out there and the wins, that would have to be my favorite game. We've played that more than any other. But again, I'm like a mile wide and an inch deep. A lot of the games that surround me in this room, I haven't even opened up out of shrink wrap. So I just.
But they're there when you're ready for them.
That's exactly right.
All right, question number two. How do we get the Carolina Insider podcast on the stock market? I feel like this should be something that we're able to make happen. How can we get people to start investing in us?
I love it. I think you already are, because they invest their time. You guys do this podcast a couple times a week, I believe. You've done it for years. So I believe that you have created a large audience that's invested in you. Now, if you're talking about making even more money than you guys already are.
That's a low bar, David.
I mean, I'm not exactly sure of the dynamics here. And I know this is, I think it's a University of North Carolina thing as opposed to a private thing, but I'm not even that sure. I just listened to you guys without understanding the business model behind it. But I would say,
us too.
You know, if you were serious about it, you would make sure that you're a company. Adam, I think I'd make you CEO. Jones, I'm going to make you the chief marketing guy.
I like that.
All right. Do I get a Carolina Blue jester cap?
I'll be happy to be on your board. And yeah. And so we'd be a for-profit enterprise. And so, you know, presumably from people listening, maybe there's some ads that we have on the podcast and we make some money from that. But we have a lot of podcasts with The Motley Fool. And for us, it's not actually a primary moneymaker. It's really it's a relationship builder, and I suspect that's what you guys have done probably in more volume than I have with my podcast over the years, and I think that's very valuable.
So one thing Jones and I talk about that sometimes people don't understand is people always like to talk to us about the Tar Heels no matter where we are, no matter what we're doing. If we're just at the grocery store buying sugar, they want to talk about the Tar Heels, and they don't always realize that that's us talking about work. So when you're at the grocery store on aisle 4 and people find out who you are and what you do, do they always want to say, like, all right, what have you got for me, David? What can you tell me? Do they always want to talk about your work?
There is that. Yeah, there is that. I don't think I'm as recognizable as you guys are, but, yeah, if I got my full cap on, I probably am. I tend not to go to the grocery store with my full cap on.
But then people don't approach you when you have that on.
I'm an enthusiast for my subject. I mean, I love talking about the stock market. I know you guys love talking about Carolina sports and just sports in general as well. And, you know, I particularly like to be analytical about things. So if our team's bad, I like to call them out as bad. I'm not a homer fan at all. That's why, you know, I take some small pride. It's a dark, dark feeling that I cheered against our alma mater my entire freshman year. But I was basically trying to be true to my roots, but also analytical. And as I thought more analytically about Carolina, by my sophomore year, I was like, I'm a total idiot. I mean, this is such an amazing, Dean Smith was there. Just think about all that we learned from Dean Smith and all that we're learning from great coaches like Karen Shelton, Coach Roy Williams, and boy, am I happy to have Mac Brown back. And so you know, there's, but being analytical as opposed to a mere homer, my favorite fans are the ones who really think hard about their teams and think we can always be better, not defend ourselves against, you know, critical attacks from, I don't know, Duke noobs. I really don't like Duke. I want to make that clear earlier. I said they're a great model because I use college basketball to teach investing to people. I'll say, you know, what are the 10 programs that have won the most games over the last 25 years? You mentioned them earlier. Well, same thing's true of the stock market. You know, think about Starbucks. What an awesome winner that company has been. Again, it's really grown up over the course of my life. Howard Schultz kind of got it all going. It came public in the early 1990s. It's been a monster winner. Starbucks is probably the U.S. corporation that has done the most in China, which is very forward-thinking. And so that's a great example. Starbucks is like Carolina basketball. It wins almost every year. It's doing great stuff, and a lot of people know it. It's a brand people respect. Right. So there's just so much overlap between sports and investing.
We do a lot of stuff with Eric Montross's Big Grits' Father's Day camp here in Chapel Hill. If we were going to buy one share of stock for Big Grits' camp and say, we are gifting this to you, this is from the pod, this is from David Gardner, we want you to have this, and it's going to make your camp better down the road 10 years from now, what should we give them?
Yeah, so, Adam, I love that question, and I hate that question. I am going to answer it. But the reason I love that question is because, hey, you care enough to think about stocks and talking with kids. And you're asking me, and I'm flattered. So I love it. I hate it because I'm never the one-stock guy, right? I mean, I would hate to say a stock that didn't do well, and people would end up judging investing or the stock market based on a single stock, right? So, but, you know, I will give you one stock. And you know, there's other things we could talk about this company, but Shopify. Have you ever heard of Shopify?
Sure.
Yeah, Shopify has been a tremendous winner, which is important to me. A lot of people think the stock market is buy low, sell high. And I'd say those are four of the most harmful words ever invented for people's money. Because for the most part, you're not looking, again, to buy the retreads or the discarded cigar butts, right? You're looking for the winners. And so you should be buying high, I'd say, and not trying not to sell. Instead of buy low, sell high, how about this? Buy high. Buy the best, and then try not to sell. That's going to be a much better formula for people. So when I think about Shopify, this is a stock that has already doubled more than once over the last 4 or 5 years. But it's also a company that is still emerging. You know, Shopify, for those who don't know it, is a business that is all about you creating your business on the internet. So you guys talked about Carolina Insider Podcast and going public with this company or this podcast or this business. Right, that's what Shopify enables. It lets you create your own e-commerce platform and run your business off of the internet. So it basically powers entrepreneurs. And that's a great business. They also have a wonderful leader in Toby Lutka. They happen to be a Canadian company, but they are on the American exchanges. And Shopify is a stock that both my brother and I, as the two founders of The Motley Fool, both love. And it's made our members a lot of money. But without looking back, because I'm always looking ahead, remember my license plate, I'm all about what happens next, and I think Shopify continues to win. Now, is it going to be, you know, it's made more than 20 times its money in the last 4 years. So you might think, wait, you're saying buy that now? And I'm saying, yeah, because in the same way, you know, I would say, Adam Jones, what do winners do?
They win.
They win, exactly. Just as true in the stock market as it is in sports. And so that's why I continue to recommend a stock like Amazon, even though these days it's more like $2,300 rather than $3.21, because it has been winning and will keep winning throughout time. You have to be patient. You have to be willing to take some really bad years, like we just saw in Carolina Hoops this year. They don't happen very often, but you got to sit through them and be resilient. And so that's why, you know, I hate your question, Adam, and I love it. It's not about Shopify. There are many great companies out there. But if I was thinking about something that I would put out there at the camp to kids, the only thing about that is it's a little bit removed from their lives. So sometimes it's good to give kids Disney, you know, or maybe Tesla or Zynga, which is a mobile games maker that has been a good stock for us, right? So thinking about what do the kids themselves relate to. So I don't know whether I can pitch Shopify that well to Eric's kids. I think I could explain
I bet you
it.
Could.
I think I could explain it, but it maybe doesn't come as trippingly off the tongue as Nike, which has been another great stock that everybody should have bought and held over the last 20-plus years. Right. And so the same brands and things that we all use and admire, whether it's sports brands or, you know, product brands, turns out that's usually those are the same companies that make people money over the course of time. And the goal for you and me is to figure them out, try to get there ahead of time, and then just keep holding for long periods of time, which, by the way, is really relaxing and easy. People who trade in and out of the market are working so much harder than I am. I've often likened it to boats, right? There are a lot of people who are in canoes or rowboats. They're paddling hard. Sometimes they're looking backwards if they're in a rowboat, which is a real mistake. But even the canoe paddlers are working really hard to move their boat. And by contrast, my approach involves sitting in a sailboat, finding the tailwind, and just sitting there and having a great time. People in sailboats have a glass of wine, and they're talking with friends. People in canoes, because I've been there at summer camp, that's not nearly as fun. So that's really how I kind of summarize my approach.
I like David's. David's like, look, just go buy Amazon and Nike and Disney and go hang out on your boat. That's the way you've got it figured out, dude. All right, I got one more. Since we're calling out individual things, what's the worst stock pick that you've ever made?
The worst stock pick that I've ever made was Krispy Kreme donuts.
Oh.
And you know, I mention that in part because I think anybody from the state of North Carolina could recognize Krispy Kreme. I married into a wonderful family, my wife, who is also a Moorhead of Carolina. The McKinnon family of Winston-Salem, such a beautiful family, taught me so much about life. And Krispy Kreme, I think, started in Winston-Salem.
Yep. Correct.
And at a certain point, I recommended the stock, and unfortunately I did it right before some really bad management was going to happen. And they started cooking the books. This is an earlier period of Krispy Kreme. It's a company that's still going today, and it's a lot better today. But I happened to time it up with when there was some fraud at the company. And you as an investor are usually the last to hear about that, right? And so I was, and the stock dropped almost 100% from where I recommended it. And I also want to hasten to add, guys, that, you know, I'm not afraid to lose, or I'm not ashamed of my losers. We're always going to have them. And especially as investors, we're going to have a lower win percentage than Coach Roy has generated over the course of his career. And you have to be comfortable with that. You have to be willing to airball it up there 10 times in a row sometimes. And people are like, wait, I thought you were good. I thought you were a 5-star recruit. I thought you were professional. But you just airballed the free throw 7 times in a row. So why should I listen to you? And that person should understand that the game of investing involves more active failure than most people can tolerate in life, which is a lot of the time why people don't hold stocks, right? Because Amazon, which I recommended at 3, went to 95. And then 2 years later, it went from 95 to 7. And I just kept holding all the way through. But that hurts a lot when you made 30 times your money over the course of 4 years, and then it goes from 95 to 7 over the following 2 years. Again, I'm still holding 23 years later, very happy where it is. But you have to be willing to just eat it and look like an idiot.
Hey, David, you and I can both figure that part out of it well. I know that part well myself.
Well, and I call myself a fool, so it makes it really easy for me, Jones.
David, real quickly, I know the Motley Fool we've said, but how can people find you if they've heard about this for the first time, they're interested and want to learn a little bit more? How can people find you?
Sure. Well, our website is fool.com. Nobody else wanted that URL when we bought it about 25 years ago. So that's where we live and breathe. I mean, my email address is davidg@fool.com, and that comes to me directly. So if anybody wanted to email me, they're welcome to. I've always put that out over the years. By the way, I do want to, because I love to think, can I add one more thing about basketball?
Of course you can.
All right, good, guys. So you know, I'm the person who sits there and talks to the announcers at the television set. And that can be annoying to watch games with me. And especially when I hear conventional wisdom I don't like. I don't think you guys have ever done this, but on ESPN I'll hear this from time to time. So I just wanted to put out one of my pet peeves watching hoops. Here it is. It's the whole idea that those first 4 minutes of the second half or the last 4 minutes of the first half are going to be such a big factor in the game. Now, this is something that I've heard for years. And, you know, psychologically I can understand it. You want to go into the locker room having hit the three at the buzzer, and you want to come out of the locker room in those first couple minutes, right? You want to think, hey, things are really together. What Coach talked about, I mean, we just ran a few sets, and we just went on an 8-0 run. The only problem with that is I'm not sure that's ever really been analyzed and whether that analysis would stand up. So I'm the guy who loves all 40 minutes. I think minute one is as important as minute 40. And to me, it's hilarious how often people call out those first 4 minutes. I think even Coach Roy does it some himself, and I realize – you know, it can be important, but I also think from an analytical standpoint, if that were really true, then we would see all kinds of statistics that mention that. Like post-game, people would be talking about those last 4 minutes and those first 4 minutes, and we would regularly be crunching numbers to show the importance of that. But I don't see that. So I don't know what you guys think of that, but that's one of the things that I say to my television set when I'm watching hoops.
Hang on, Coach Williams is right here. So, Coach Williams, David said that he thinks you're full of it and you don't know what you're talking about basketball. I think he used the word fool.
I'm emboldened to do that because one of my heroes is Bill James, so I eventually got to meet years later, used to do that. He just said flat out, I know I don't play the game. I know I'm just a journalist, but this is what I believe, and I think most people don't believe this, and so let's test it, right, with a hypothesis, gather data. So that would be one of my hoops hang-ups is I question a little bit that conventionalism. People often talk about it right in the moment, right? Those first 2 minutes, they're talking about it, but then they don't even refer to it in the last 4 minutes of the game. Nobody's talking about those first 4 minutes.
David, man, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you giving us more than 45 minutes this afternoon. Appreciate talking with you. Great conversation. And looking forward to, hopefully, if you're in Chapel Hill sometime soon, we'll get a chance to meet you.
You bet. I try to make it back every year. And sometimes I speak to the business school, Jones, and I'm like, man, if as an undergrad I could see a picture of me now wearing a jester cap talking to Keenan Flagler as an English major, I'd be like, what happened?
I'd be like, I knew Carolina wasn't what it was supposed to be. Go Hoyas.
We thank David for his time. Adam is furiously buying and selling stock on his phone at this moment to try to get himself in a line with David's plans.
Michael Douglas just walked through here wearing a suit, telling everybody this is Wall Street. Greed is good. Buy, buy, buy.
Buy, buy, sell, sell.
We've got it all under control.
So, hope you enjoyed it. Adam, I know I've said this a couple times, but it really hit me the other day when I was looking at our stockpile of interviews that we have. We got some good interviews.
Yeah.
Got some good ones coming.
So, not just the ones that people have heard, but the ones that they don't even know about yet.
All right, Adam, do I need to find a tiny horse?
Yes.
What's on the top of Adam's list?
Up in horsey heaven, here's a thing.
Brought to you by Top of the Hill.
You trade your legs for angels' wings.
Where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
And once we've all said goodbye.
Just a couple things. Are we going back and forth, or do you want me to do the tiny horse list and then you can do your list?
I will do my list after your list.
Okay.
We can't have both Dueling List and Little Sebastian all at once, Adam.
Right.
There's only so many lead-in songs I can use.
The NCAA extended the recruiting dead period through July 31st. That's a long time. And that really hurts a lot of sports.
Yeah.
And I understand, like, not arbitrarily hurting them. But if you're a class of 2021 high school player who thought they were going to go out this summer in whatever your sport is and up your profile and get recruited, that is not going to happen anymore.
Well, and as you know, we can't talk about individual recruits, but I think you are seeing a different approach, especially from basketball, in some of the offers that they are extending. I mean, Roy Williams has long said that he does not offer a scholarship unless he has seen the player play in person. Well, there's some guys that he may not be able to see play in person. And so you are seeing some scholarship offers from Carolina basketball that I think are unique, not because the player's not good enough. That's not what I'm talking about at all. I just mean I think they're coming out in a way that you would have never seen before because Coach Williams can't physically go see these guys play.
And in sports other than basketball and football, I think you're going to see some assistant coaches really be hurt by not able to get camp money from the summer. I mean,
it's a big deal.
I legitimately think you will see assistant coaches leave the coaching profession because they're not getting camp money this summer and they just can't feed their family. That camp money is a huge deal at that level. So it'll be interesting to see how that all works out. Obviously, it's a difficult challenge, just like everyone's facing. Not the only challenge there is, but it's one that in our world is important. I can't remember if I mentioned that Matt Stone is in the 100% Pod Listener Club, but he is. Bubba Cunningham was on another podcast recently.
What?
It was called All the Smoke. No, it was called The Audible with Stuart Mandel. And I thought he made some...
What?
I thought he made some really good points. And maybe one day we'll have him on this podcast. That would be great. He made some really good points about name, image, and likeness. Mm. And just not immediately falling in line with everyone saying, this is great, let's do it. And when we have him on, we'll talk to him about that. But I just thought really thoughtful and made you stop and go, oh yeah, maybe we should actually consider some of the ramifications of this and how to do it best rather than, well, whatever anyone else said, I'm in favor of that because that seems progressive and I want to be progressive. You can be progressive and thoughtful at the same time. And that's what he came across as wanting to do. Last thing, I meant to talk about this on a recent podcast, but I forgot. It's incredible to me how similar Billy Cunningham and Lenny Rosenbluth sound to each other.
Yes. The first answer that Billy Cunningham gave when we were doing the interview, like I wrote down, he sounds just like Lenny, and held up a piece of paper to you. And then when I was finishing just getting the interview cleaned up and ready for air, it struck me again. They sound exactly the same.
Well, and of course, everyone has listened to both those episodes, and if not, you should go back and download it multiple times. By the way, thanks to everybody for all those nice reviews of the Carolina Insider podcast. Those reviews and ratings help us.
As soon as Adam got all furious.
Yeah, the one-star review, we visited his home, and we took care of that incident.
Yeah, we don't need to worry about that anymore.
And the gift baskets for all the five-star reviews are going out soon. But it's incredible. I mean, those are two of the greatest players in Carolina basketball history. Mm-hmm. And they're from basically down the street from each other. And I think you forget how important New York City is to Carolina basketball. You don't have anywhere close to what we know as Carolina basketball without New York City.
Absolutely. And I think it's changed now. Just because there's so many more players. But yes, I mean, the history of Carolina basketball, we've talked about it before, how important that 57 team was. And to Adam's point, if you've never heard that 57 roundtable that we did with Lenny Rosenbluth, Joe Quigg, Tommy Kearns, you should go listen to that. That was really good. I don't remember when it was, but it was good. I think it was in February of 2019, maybe. So I would encourage you to go listen to that one if you never have. I think it's really good.
I agree.
Okay, a couple things. Let's visit the tweets. We talked about we were talking about Jack Coombs Field last podcast, Adam. Mm. We received a tweet from our friend Blitz is an Emotion on Twitter. She said the 2008 baseball series at Jack Coombs Field was the coldest she has ever been at a baseball game, and she's been to games even in Chicago in April. She says she had forgotten about how cold she was until we mentioned being at Jack Coombs Field. That was, remember, Friday. It was raining because Carolina played Duke in basketball that Saturday, and you and I did the Friday and Sunday game of that baseball series with the basketball game on Saturday. And that Friday game was one of the coldest games in the history of games.
That was Eve Carson weekend.
Yes, I think it was.
That's exactly right. Was that the same weekend that the lady yelled at you? I feel like it might have been.
I don't know. It was the right time period.
Yeah.
Mm. So many.
I too had forgotten about the chilly weather.
We have been the hub of student TV reunions in our Twitter mentions, Adam, as we have really had a little glow up there as far as our knowledge of former STV.
I've watched a lot of student TV General College here lately, and we're going to have some of that on the video pod in a future episode, so subscribe or do whatever you do to a video pod now. It has been entertaining.
Yeah. Hey, since Adam deliberately ignored you, Alex Thompson, don't worry, I will mention that you're in the 100% pod club.
Rusty Sebastian said he still has his Carolina Cougars game day giveaway featuring Billy Cunningham from his ABA days. We talked to Mr. Cunningham about that in our conversation.
That was a sneaky part of that interview, was a couple ABA stories. Carolina Cougars.
We've received a bunch of people just randomly seeing Dirty Dancing stuff and sending it to us. Also, Kyle Franklin said he's a little behind on the pods, just heard the Dirty Dancing review and is blown away that the Kellerman song and Hark the Sound is the same tune.
Yeah, changes the whole way you look at it.
Justin Miller. Again, Adam deliberately denying you, Justin, but I got your back. He's in the 100% pod club. Sean Patrizzi laid this out for us and wanted to know our thoughts, Adam. He said, what if you held the conference, talking about basketball, the conference basketball tournaments on Thanksgiving week? Keep both November basketball and the conference tournament traditions alive. You give TV some good basketball content. You give the automatic bid to the regular season champion and start the season in January after you have the tournaments in November. Wanted to know our thoughts on that.
My thought is Sean Patrizzi egregiously ignoring the TM I had placed on that very idea when we discussed it previously. And as we know, TMs are always respected, never ignored. As this one was, I think I suggested that idea a while back. I still like that idea because conference tournaments aren't that important anymore. That's the way you make them important.
I think the only way that that isn't a great idea is you take away the Cinderella run possibility for a team in the tournament to make the NCAA tournament.
No more bid thieves.
Right. So that's the only thing. Because I don't mind that at all. And I may have said that when you said it too. But I don't think it's a terrible idea. I do wonder, Adam, I mean, I do, as you said, I think, and we've said, I think there will be some larger changes that come out of everything that's going on, and that could be one. I mean, the talk of basketball not starting till January isn't a new idea. That's been talked about before, and we'll see. College basketball is a long season.
Yes.
So, baseball's a long season.
Yes.
So, we'll see. Okay. Adam, a what up? To our friends at Top of the Hill, sent a tweet out about this, but forgot to mention it on the pod itself. Our friends, Scott Maitland, the owner, Guy Murphy, the general manager, and others hooking us up with a big old bottle of hand sanitizer for Pod World Headquarters. So we are fully sanitized in here.
I have used said hand sanitizer. It is a very high quality product.
Oh, yeah. Your hand, it's got, I believe, what is the number? You're supposed to be at least 70% alcohol, I think, to really effectively kill the coronavirus and probably more. This is 80% alcohol. Adam, your hands have never been fresher.
Not just my hands. I took a bath in it.
That would be something. Adam, I know you saw this. The Cheez-It Bowl has come to the ACC.
I did not see this.
The Camping World Bowl down in Orlando. Now, the Cheez-It Bowl, my friend. So there is the possibility that the Tar Heels could potentially play in a Cheez-It Bowl down the road.
So no more other Cheez-It Bowl.
Correct. Either that bowl will get a new sponsor or that bowl goes away. I don't know. But Cheez-It has moved to the game in Orlando. Now the Cheez-It Bowl.
John Swofford laughing maniacally as he thieved that sponsorship away and has that plum destination.
Throwing handfuls of Cheez-Its in the air, seeing how many you can catch. If he doesn't catch any, it doesn't matter. He's got so many.
I feel like the Cheez-It Bowl is an okay fit for that bowl. We've been to that bowl. That's fine.
The ACC Network sent out a tweet, Adam, asking for your favorite two-sport athlete in ACC history. And one of the selections was Julius Peppers. I feel as though Julius Peppers would be a wise selection on this.
Well, I'm a little surprised the ACC Network went back that far, since most of their things happened in the last 2 or 3 years.
Well, don't worry. Donovan McNabb was a choice also.
So Julius Peppers, Charlie Ward.
Donovan McNabb and Jimmy Graham were the four choices.
Okay.
Now,
the only two real choices are Julius Peppers and Charlie Ward.
Yeah. I mean, it just says, I don't think it's asking for like the greatest. It just says, who's your favorite two-sport athlete? And those are your four choices.
Julius Peppers.
Yeah, the answer is Julius Peppers. Although, Charlie Ward, certainly a viable selection. Someone who is legitimate to be in this conversation.
My very close second favorite would be Ronald Curry.
Yeah.
Number three would be Jesse Holly.
Oh, wow. Brooks Foster.
Brooks Foster, and then Charlie Ward. Greg Ellis.
Oh.
Then wasn't he on the varsity for a second, maybe?
I had totally forgotten that. I feel like you're right, though.
Octavius Barnes?
Octavius Barnes definitely was.
Sorry, Charlie Ward. You're getting pushed down pretty far here. But I don't.
Tyrell Godwin. Remember, he did football and baseball.
That's right. Cookie Massey.
Oh, Brandon Russell, the running back.
Oh, yeah. Big kickoff return.
Bryn Renner played baseball for a little bit.
Charlie Ward, it's looking like you didn't make the top 10, buddy.
Yeah, I hate to knock you down so many pegs, Charlie Ward, but such is life. Adam, the Tar Heel basketball freshmen have their numbers. All right. I need your immediate reaction when I read them to you.
Okay.
Caleb Love, number two.
If you're a point guard coming to Carolina, I feel like two is what you're picking.
Well, I will say I was looking at the video that the UNC basketball Twitter account sent out and was showing my kids, and my son said, oh, the best players always wear number two. Mm-hmm. Number two is getting that rep because it went from, I mean, just here recently. First of all, a lot of great players have worn two. Raymond Felton wore number two. Wayne Ellington wore number two.
Briefly.
But we're on the run of Joel Berry, Kobe White, Cole Anthony, and now Caleb Love. So it's a pretty good run.
It's a great run.
I have not seen Caleb Love play 1 minute of Carolina basketball, but I deem him to be good.
I saw his mixtape,
yeah,
and I have concluded and analyzed that he is very good.
RJ Davis, number four.
Yeah, that. I like RJ Davis, and I think we've talked about this. He just seems like a baller to me, based mostly on his name and his hometown.
Yeah.
Not really based on his actual basketball
ability. And he looks
like
Joel Berry to me. I feel like physically, I think he looks like Joel Berry.
I think it's always tough when you pick a number that was just worn by a senior, who everybody's kind of accustomed to seeing in that number. I think that's tough.
Bobby Fraser wore number four. He was not on the team last year.
No, not last year.
Dayron Sharpe, number 11. It's a slimming number for a big man.
I see a little Bryce Johnson symmetry
here. Well, I always, number 11, I always think of Bryce Johnson.
Yeah, I think that's right. And Michael Brooker.
Friend of the pod.
Right.
Yeah, Dayron Sharpe's a big boy. Number 11, the two ones. Trimming.
That's a good pick.
Walker Kessler, number 13.
See, that's intriguing because 13 used to always be the number you didn't want. But now it seems like it's gotten pretty popular. And I'm a little surprised that Puff Johnson, who we haven't gotten to, didn't want 13, but obviously he didn't. Cam Johnson wore 13. Walker Kessler is going to wear 13. Maybe we know he's a little bit of an outside shooter, not just a big guy. So I'm not opposed to it. You got to be tough to pick 13.
Speaking of Puff Johnson, he goes with number 14.
I like that.
Maybe he's saying, he's challenging Cam, saying, I'm one better than you.
Yeah, I'm one up on you, Cam. I like that. A little competitiveness.
Finally, Kerwin Walton, 24. Adam, I love it because Kerwin Walton is Kenny Williams to me, even if they aren't the same person. I feel like they are. I've never met Kerwin Walton. I have never seen him play in person. I feel as though he and Kenny Williams are basketball bros.
And now by choosing the number, he has made the comparison inevitable.
Same initials.
Yeah, that's a heavy weight to bear, but knock in a couple three-pointers and it's fine.
That's all you got. Look, guys, just come in and be great players and we're going to love you.
Yeah. With a limited summer in which you didn't get to do what you thought you were going to do. We didn't get to have you on the pod or see you at camp.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem.
It'll be fine.
Last thing, Adam. Normally we do a local news reading. But this is going to be a local news audio edition. A little tip of the cap to Ken Cleary, friend of the pod, who sent this to me and said, you might want this for a local news. And I can't do it justice, so I'm just going to play the clip and then we'll come back with it. Here it is.
Before the restaurant even opened this morning, there was a knock at the back door. An employee thought it must be another employee coming to work. It was a man with a gun. He robbed him, and then he took off running for these woods.
I was nervous when the gentleman walked in, and because he was shifting back and forth and a little edgy. But when he took out the gun, I knew he meant business.
The robber took off running with the cash into these woods behind the restaurant, but he didn't get far. Three employees chased him down.
Manager Claudette moved with the quickness of a jungle cat as she leapt into her burgundy Tercel to give chase. I don't know. In a frenzied moment of knowing candor, I looked toward Darrell and Tino and uttered a stirring call to action. Dem Arby's boys, wheels up.
Skeet skirt.
Adam, this is one of the more befuddling local newses that I think we've ever had. That can't be real.
Well, and you showed it to me, so I can vouch for the fact that it appears to be on a real television station.
Yeah.
But everything from the way the reporter starts out to the way it ends says to me that this is a dramatic performance of what this local theater group believes a local newscast would look like. You need to look it up on the internet to fully appreciate it, because some of the visuals are incredible.
They're gonna do Fiddler on the Roof, then Camelot, and then they're gonna do a dramatic recreation of an Arby's break-in.
Our performance of My Fair Lady has been postponed due to the corona, but we are going to do Arby's 2020. Buy your tickets now. Did they all talk to each other beforehand and decide, guys, we're really going for it?
Well, and again, if you haven't seen the clip, you don't know this. But at the end, where the star of the show is doing his dramatic description of what happened, they all do a coordinated move, because he's got like his two friends behind him. And they all, you know, if you've seen the live pod, you know the move that Adam makes when we go to our BMW social drive. They all do that together, like they're kicking back, riding their car, driving their car with just one hand on the steering wheel.
Yeah. They may be riding dirty.
They see me rolling.
Adam, if you are riding dirty and you need some medical help, you can always count on our friends at UNC Healthcare, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. UNCHealthcare.org/sports. Adam, anything else?
No.
Okay. We'll be back at least one show next week. I'm not making any promise. It's like the coronavirus playbook, Adam.
Right.
I've got a plan, but we may have to deviate from that plan. There will be at least one pod next week. There may be two. We'll see how it goes.
There'll be a video pod.
And we will do another live video pod. Yeah, don't forget. So we have locked in our time. We're going to try to stay consistent Thursday at 1 o'clock. We had to do 1:30 the first week for some schedules of our guests, but our plan is 1
o'clock. Jones was getting his nails done.
Yeah, that's right. I was out training for my mile run.
Yeah, that's right.
Adam, it's not funny to joke about getting your nails done in a time where you weren't supposed to be in those salons.
I have been suitably admonished, and I would like to issue my apology to former pod guest Governor Roy Cooper.
Hi, everybody. I'm North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper. See you later, big grits.
Yeah. And all the people of the great state of North Carolina.
Yeah, Adam. So Thursday, 1 o'clock. Is going to be the locked-in time for the live pod. We're going to do it for a couple more weeks and then see where it takes us.
The moon!
All the way to the White House, my friend. All right. Adam, what do you say we let David Gardner and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider?
I'm David Gardner. See you later, Big Grip.
When I was small,
got nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.